You are listening to Wells Tech, episode 561, recorded on August 7th, 2018. Terrible Master, Wonderful Servant. Wells Tech is a weekly podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Today on the show, we continue our review of the book, Eat That Frog by Brian Tracy, Technology as a Terrible Master, but Also a Wonderful Servant. So lots of productivity tips about how to integrate and use the technologies that God has given us in a productive way without letting it control us. Our tips and picks feature some Gmail tips from Sally, and I take a deep dive in Apple Photos, some great community feedback, and a lot more. Stay tuned. Hello, Sally.
Hi, Martin. Happy to be joining you today from the Central Time Zone, no less.
Now, that's three different distinct locations, and if I'm not mistaken, three different states in the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, I think you're keeping up with things pretty well. Maybe we were in Michigan for 2 weeks, but that's not really our goal with this traveling. We really want to go places and stay, but we went a place that was a long way away, and now we had to get back so we could get our son enrolled in college in a couple of weeks. So, hopefully we'll stay more settled.
I saw a Facebook post. Maybe you saw it too. Somebody, an RVer, saying one of the prime advantages of that mobile lifestyle is it's very difficult for your kids to find you, move back in.
Yeah, I think my response to that is my kids are going to wish that it was more difficult because our whole goal
we're going to be on their doorstep.
Yeah, we've actually told them this since they were little boys. You need to have hookups because mom and dad are going to come and stay with you for 3 months at a time and we'll just rotate between our boys. I don't think that'll be the case, but yeah.
That's funny.
So tell us, I'm curious about your experience this past weekend where you were actually on the field at a Major League Baseball game. How was the photography experience at Wells Night?
It was neat. Our second vice president, Joel Voss, was throwing out the first pitch. It was Wells Night at Miller Park. And each year we get to pick, you know, one of our Synod officials. Mark Schrader was the first one. I think somebody from MLC, maybe Steve Thiesfeld.
Yeah.
Did it as well, and this time it was Joel Voss, and they needed somebody to man the camera, so I got a field pass and was down there. It's kind of neat. I mean, it was, you know, the spot, I was not in the spotlight or anything. Joel had the much harder role of trying to get a pitch from the mound to the catcher without bouncing it in, and he did a fine job. But I was able to take photos of that, so I got on the field, and also take photos of the thousands of people that showed up for Wells Night, and that was kind of a neat thing, too. So they came by the busloads and got a chance to go out there and meet them and take some photos, and some of those are up on wells.net already.
Yeah, I'll have to look for a link to that and throw it in the show notes. I'm sure people would enjoy seeing your photography. So, new career in the budding? Are you leaving the technology area?
No, this is not a retirement plan.
Okay. All right. Good to know. Wouldn't want to lose you to that dream job on the field of the Brewers. Did the Brewers win that night?
They did. Kind of an interesting story there, too. I don't usually stay to the end. I'm not a huge, you know, truth be told, I'm not a huge Brewers fan. I did not grow up here and did not grow up a Brewers fan. But we left by the top of the eighth inning. They were down 3-2 and seemed like things were headed the wrong direction. Lo and behold, three-run homer in the bottom of the ninth made it one of the best Brewer games of the year. We missed it. So,
How about that?
But it was a good finish for Wells Night. So it was neat. See, everybody, you know, not everybody, but a lot of people purchase. We sell cheap T-shirts. And so it's kind of a sea of blue Wells Night at Miller Park T-shirts out there. So helps us to identify ourselves and get the Wells name out there, at least in the Milwaukee area. So it was pretty cool.
Very fun. Well, we have a podcast to do. I think we should shift gears and talk a little bit about Eating Frogs.
Eat That Frog by Brian Tracy, a book we've been reviewing and kind of working through ourselves over the course of the summer. We're up to chapters 15 and 16 of 21 productivity tips, and we've finally reached the point where we are talking about technology. Technology, the two chapters are entitled Technology is a Terrible Master, and Technology is a Wonderful Servant.
Yeah, but so, before we jump into that, Martin, I was hoping we could revisit our topic for last week. Chapter 14 in particular was called Motivate Yourself into Action. And some of the advice that Brian Tracy gave had to do with optimism and being an optimist about everything that comes your way. Even when there are curveballs, take it as opportunities to learn and don't say bad things or, you know, anything like that. Just take an optimistic approach. Yes. And we had a little bit of listener feedback from Theodore Kufall, who wrote to us via Google Plus, and I thought it was really interesting. He says, one of the things that struck me about chapter 14 is in the book is the part about being an optimist. I was recently listening to another podcast that suggested that being a pessimist is better when it comes to things like innovation. It wasn't supported by any kind of research data, as seemed to be suggested in the book, but was more of just the way the host of the show views things. I think it is, at the very least, something to consider. Pessimism can create positive results because it leads to a feeling of never being satisfied with the way things are. It can be problematic if it leads to despair. I'm sorry, I lost my place. If it leads to despair that a situation can never be perfected. However, I worry sometimes that optimism leads to contentedness, which is obviously good, but that contentedness can lead to stagnation, which would seem to run counter to the point of this book. Optimism is certainly the healthier approach, but I feel the elements of pessimism can be used in positive ways. Interesting insight, Theodore. I really appreciate you sharing that. And I actually responded and said, yeah, I think I probably would classify myself as a pessimist many days because I try to see what could go wrong with things as I'm testing different applications and things we're developing in the Synod. It's kind of my job to be skeptical and think about ways it could break or whatever. And it does serve us well to consider those things and work through those things so that the product is better in the end. What do you think, Martin?
I think there's some value in that. I think sometimes when you hear the word pessimism, you sometimes equate it with negativism or negativity. Mm-hmm. And I think that's usually always bad. At least that's where I would lean. So I think there is a distinction between those two. So yeah, pessimism or being a pessimist, I think has its place, but certainly balance. But I agree. I think that's a great point.
So Kevin and I kind of took it to another level. My husband Kevin and I were discussing this, and I asked him if there would be complete optimism in heaven someday, if our new Adam, our new life in heaven that awaits us is a life of optimism. And we kind of agreed that there wouldn't be anything to be pessimistic about in
right.
heaven. And so I don't know if it's the same equating old Adam, new Adam to pessimism and optimism, but I just kind of took it to another level there. So
yeah,
just interesting yep. thoughts.
Glass half full, half empty.
There you go.
Is another way to look at it too. So
all right.
All right. So we were a little bit pessimistic about ever getting to the topic of technology when we went through
Good
chapters
segue.
1 to 14, but we're finally there, and I think it was worth the wait. A couple of facts and figures he throws out at the beginning, one of them, and I'm not sure, you know, your mileage may vary, but I do kind of believe this for on average, people check their smartphones 85 times a day.
Shocking.
True or false,
huh?
You think?
Wow. I bet
What's
I do it that many or more. Unfortunately, I'm guilty.
Yeah. Well, I think sometimes it has replaced, you know, the watches on our wrist and, you know, other things. It's become
weather
our central
channel.
Communication device. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Checking the weather, et cetera, et cetera. The interesting part is I think vendors are beginning to recognize that, hey, might be a problem, and I think they may be a little bit late to the party, but Google and now recently Apple are releasing operating systems that give you tools to help you kind of curb this a little bit. iOS 12, which is coming out here in the fall, lets you track your usage, how many times you open your phone, how much time you spend in certain applications. There have always been applications you can install on your computers that will do that as well. The iOS application actually will set limits or allows you to set limits for how much time you can spend in a particular application, you know, Facebook or Twitter or email or whatever it is. So that's interesting that vendors are beginning to say, hey, this is important enough that we're going to make this a feature. And in fact, they call it out in their keynotes saying, hey, we've added this. So very interesting.
Mm-hmm. And certainly blocking addictive websites like Facebook, you mentioned, is probably a really great place to start to get to have less smartphone time or distracting technology or whatever. A few weeks back, I talked about a Chrome extension, To-Do Book, which allows you to block Facebook until you complete a list of to-do items, and it'll give you 5 minutes of time or whatever on Facebook if you complete your list of things to do. However, they give you a back door. There's a button that says Quitter, and you can poke the Quitter button, and then you get access to Facebook without completing your to-do items. So, you know, you can do different tricks like that, and I'm sure there's many of them out there. At one point, I actually went as far, this is shocking, as uninstalling the Facebook app on my phone. But guess what? My phone browser will go to Facebook and let me log in even without the app.
That's right.
So there's a backdoor for that as well. So you have to really be disciplined if you've got issues with addictive sites or apps like that.
Yep. It's interesting on the topic of addiction. Brian Tracy shared an interesting story where he was at a business luncheon, and for whatever reason, grace was prayed. There was a prayer that was prayed, and then he noticed that some of the people around his table continued to seemingly pray after, you know, the amen was said. He thought, boy, these are really devout people, really praying over their meal. And as it turns out, they in fact were not praying, but they had their heads down in their laps looking at their smartphones. So he used that as an application of just kind of the addictive nature. So there you are sitting at a luncheon with other people that you're supposed to be conversing with, maybe at a round table, and you and your phone are kind of off to the side, you know, not paying attention. And you see this, I think you see this in families, you see this in restaurants. I see this all the time now. And I would call that addictive behavior.
Yeah, definitely. Unfortunately, it is very prevalent, even when you're in situations that are appropriate to be fully engaged in, you know, things like family weddings or reunions or things like that, where you get this once in a lifetime moment. You're too busy capturing it and sharing it on Instagram to really enjoy the moment in real time.
Right. And then, of course, and this is probably predictable, he gives some scenarios and maybe some even challenges to unplug. One of his suggestions to resolve to create zones of silence during the day during your day-to-day activities. Turn off your computer and your smartphone for 1 hour in the morning and 1 hour in the afternoon. You will be amazed at what happens. And he says nothing. Not that you don't get anything done, but that you don't, you know, that the world does not end because you have been disconnected.
Yeah, I think one of the examples he gives is someone that's been away on vacation and comes back to 700 emails in their inbox, and they decided to delete them all and just start fresh. I guess my takeaway on that is, on vacation, I wouldn't let 700 emails stack up because I wouldn't truly be on vacation. I'd be watching those emails and working through them while I was away and stuff. So you really do have to be aware that these kind of things creep into your day-to-day life and kind of take over. And right. A zone of silence sounds like a great idea, except when you're job demands you be right on the computer all the time, and are the expectations are that you're responding because people are communicating with you that way or whatever.
Yeah, I think that's the point, and there should be a distinction that, you know, sometimes these tools of technology aren't distractions, but are, you know, certainly time savers, productivity tools, and essential tools of the trade. So, you know, just unplugging for the sake of unplugging doesn't do you much good. But I think there certainly is value to understanding your use. And I think normally when we talk about addiction to technology, I usually connect social media usage, or, you know, just constantly checking Facebook and Twitter and those kinds of things, or even email for that matter, as addictive behavior, versus, you know, having a computer on or a tool at your disposal that's going to help you do your job.
Yeah, and that kind of leads very well into chapter 16, where he calls technology a wonderful servant. And he really kind of takes the track of, you know, if you aren't comfortable with it, if you don't use it or whatever, find a tool to help you. Use your calendar or maybe a project management tool like Trello or something like that. Try out some of those and let technology work for you. And I think we do a good job of that in general. But maybe some of his advice here about clearing the deck and using the tools you need but not overdoing it really helps you to let technology serve you rather than just overwhelm you with information.
Yep, he talks about clearing your digital workspace. A couple chapters ago, we talked about clearing your physical space so that you're, you know, you've got all the tools necessary. You're not having to hunt for different things. It's all right there. Digital workspace as well. And, you know, not having 20 windows open and, you know, finding it difficult to find the files you need. And, you know, so applying some good organizational skills to that and keeping a clean desktop and organization is really going to help you do that. So clear digital workspace. He also talked about disabling notifications, and that's something that I've done for years because by default, you know, Outlook and your phone and everything kind of has notifications turned on by default. So when you load up a program for the first time, it's binging you every time you get an email or something gets posted to Trello or you get a text message or whatever. You're getting those notifications, you know, nonstop, and that each one of those represents some kind of blip, you know, in your mental activity, and I think an obstacle to productivity. So I think find out how to turn those notifications off. Sometimes people don't because they just haven't figured out how to do it, but it's worth the time to disable those notifications, unsubscribe from email lists, you know, thin down that inbox as much as you can, and try and stay on top of things that way.
Yeah, and I think those email lists kind of creep in, Martin, because
they do. Yeah.
You want to get access to a tool or whatever. Actually, we were at the Henry Ford last weekend or 2 weekends ago, and I got an email from Ford the other day. Thanks for wanting to join our list. I'm like, nope, that is not what I intended by visiting your museum one day, you know. And so oftentimes if you want to get access to a new tool or to something cool that's free on the internet, they require you to put in your email address, and all of a sudden you're getting all their messages and things. And maybe some of them could be useful to you, but maybe you want to send those messages directly to a folder and choose to look in that folder when you're looking for something useful from them or whatever, so it doesn't clog up your email box. For the most part, unsubscribe from all those lists and see what you're missing and go back and subscribe if you really want it. But it'll really lighten your load a lot not to have to just wade through all that stuff.
Yep, and that kind of led him into the advice of categorization. You know, there are certain people or certain topics that you really need to know about, and there are tools that allow those communications to come through or go into certain folders or categories that you've set up or tags. Mm-hmm. Interesting quote in that section: segment your communication channels so that only frogs can hop into your castle of concentration. Interesting.
Yeah, I like that one too. I guess the one thing about all of this advice is kind of taking it in a look at it in terms of a cult worker, because we do want to, you know, help them, particularly through the Wells Tech podcast. And we know pastors and teachers are working hard to cover a lot of different bases as it is. So maybe having some screening or some folders where things go to or tags like you described, Martin, could help out. But there are people that need to be available when people try to communicate with them in a lot of different ways. So definitely recognize the challenge around this for our call workers.
Yep, absolutely. Anything else in this chapter, Sally?
I think we've done it justice.
One other thing I wanted to bring up. I'm sorry.
No.
One important point. Schedule, one thing he recognizes as being important, and I do too, and I try and do this, schedule large blocks of time for task completion into your calendar. It makes it harder for people to schedule you or force shorter meetings. And I guess I find that too. I have a lot of meetings, but if I don't kind of block those things out, that those times get gobbled up. And I think that's very important to kind of schedule time to do work versus just things just it's a little bit more proactive that way. So, and we've talked about that too. Schedule some time to just think. Schedule planning time, strategic planning time, schedule the time you need to get the frogs eaten. So you need to schedule that frog-eating time.
Frog-eating time. If I put that block on my calendar, you'll understand
frog
what that means.
Frog-eating time. Yep. Do not disturb.
Yeah.
I'm eating a frog. Very good. So that is chapters 15 and 16. Still not too late to grab the book that we're working through. It also has a workbook that goes along with it. We are going to go to chapters 17 and 18 next week, focusing your attention and slice and dice the task. I'm interested in that one. So we're going to get down to the task level here, too. So interesting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Sally, should we move on to our tips and picks of the week?
I think it's time, and I have one to share for all the Gmail users that are in our listening audience. I know I'm a huge Gmail fan and use it regularly and depend on it for all kinds of things, and I came across an article from ZDNet about how to back up Gmail, and it's covering a lot of different bases with the options that they give you in the article. It says, want to make sure you have a local or backup copy of all that mission critical business and personal history in your Gmail archives. This author is going to take you through a wide array of options. And he kind of divides them up and starts with the option of just forwarding the email automatically. So I kind of laughed at this because one of my one of my things that I collect apparently is a Gmail addresses. So if I have a new project
right.
or whatever, I'm like, oh, I should go grab the Gmail address for this. So I have a legitimate email address that's connected with different hats that I wear or whatever. So for instance, I was on the Treasure House board, so I have a Gmail address related to that, you know, and other things of that nature. And I do forward all those into one Gmail account, so I don't have to go check all those different Gmail accounts. But his suggestion is that you forward everything you receive in your primary Gmail account to another account, perhaps even a non-Gmail account, so that a copy of it is stored somewhere else and on someone else's server on the cloud or whatever. And there's some trade-offs with that. One is that it only starts forwarding from that point in history where you set it up. It doesn't get your whole Gmail account unless you set it up at the very beginning of your account. And it doesn't back up or forward the messages that you send from the account. Only the ones that you receive into the account get forwarded on. And of course, there might be some security issues around that as well, sending unencrypted email or whatever. So maybe not the best solution, but it would put your email in two different places. A couple of cloud-based solutions that he recommends, a cloud backup software. He mentions specifically Spin Backup and UpSafe as being two options that you can use for backup of your software in the cloud. He talks about downloading and archiving the software, and the best or easiest way to do that is with an email client software that's stored locally easily on your computer, like Outlook or Thunderbird or whatever your choice might be, so that the mail is coming down to that client software on your computer, and you can save those files or back them up however you choose. And then the last strand of backup option that he goes into is a one-time backup snapshot. Obviously not ongoing, but Google actually provides a tool for that. It's called Google Takeout, where you can download a one-time period, you know, moment in time backup of what's in your Gmail account. So he gets into a lot of details, offers a lot of different options for each of those. So if you are interested in Gmail backup, I think this is a great article to reference.
Yep. Another backup one is Backupify. That's the one we use at the Senate office here for our Gmail accounts, that for those that have them. Yep. And that Takeout is, I think, a genius thing. It's if you can just maybe schedule a Google Takeout task each month or whatever, mm-hmm. some kind of periodic thing, that can act just as well as anything else. You know, I mean, the worst thing that could happen is you lose, you know, 30 days or however many days between the scheduling. But that's just one of those tasks that you do, and it's pretty easy to do as well. So,
yep.
Nice, good tips.
Yeah, and just to kind of follow up on what you said, the Backupify works with G Suite. I'm not sure
that's
it works
right.
with Gmail accounts, like personal Gmail
accounts.
It
may
accounts.
Not. That may be true.
He mentions that in the article, so you'll have to read up on that a little bit as well.
But I would imagine a lot of our listeners are on GApp accounts of some mm-hmm. sort through school or church or whatever. So
sure,
very good, nice find. ZDNet mm-hmm. usually has some really solid advice. So good mm-hmm. pick. My pick is for our iPhone and Mac users, our Apple users, so to speak. And I use an iPhone and I use a Mac primarily. I do have a Windows machine that I use off and on, but the pick is the Photos app, which has recently been redone. It was, I think, with iOS 11, which is the current version we're on. A lot of great improvements to the Photos app on iOS, and macOS with the latest version got some awesome updates as well. If you're not familiar with it, it works a lot like any other Photos app, like Google Photos or whatever. When you take pictures, and a lot of us are just kind of taking pictures just on our iPhones or our smartphones these days, it does a great job with that. Of course, it captures location information, so you can plot things on a map. It organizes them by time, what they call moments. You can let it pick out people or by face, so you can group people by who they are. You can create smart albums. One of the nice features, if you have multiple Apple devices, let's say you have an iPad and an iPhone or a Mac and an iPhone, it offers syncing between those two. So if you take a photo on your iPhone and you have a Mac, it's going to be available on the Mac as well. And one of the neat things on the Mac and on the iPhone too is Photos has, through iCloud, has the ability to do some space-saving technology. So if you take a lot of photos mm-hmm. And you have an iCloud account, and you may have to pay a little bit to get enough storage, but it will also determine if your phone is getting full and automatically offload those and save little thumbnails on your phone, but store the real pictures in the cloud, so that when you want to view them, you're viewing a thumbnail. If you can, you can always download them if you want, but it works intelligently in the background to do that. One of the neat things that kind of got me more interested in Photos than I was before, because I was a big Lightroom user from Adobe, is some of the editing tools. Photos had traditionally been pretty weak on editing. It was more for photo management and sharing, which it does a great job at, of course, on creating these albums. But now with the editing tools, they've really brought some sophistication to that part of the application. And they've made it very smart. as well, and very approachable from somebody who maybe doesn't understand, you know, exposure and shadows and saturation and contrast and color cast and white balance, those kinds of things. It does offer all of those things, but with an easy slider, and you can easily see what it's doing. So instead of maybe just a single exposure setting, which you do have here, you can change that, of course, it has something called light. So they've really kind of simplified these things. And as you drag the light slider to the left or right, it gets darker or lighter, which does change the exposure, but it intelligently grabs, you know, brilliance, highlights, shadows, brightness, contrast, and black point along for the ride as well. So it adjusts those either up or down depending on what it sees in the picture, and normally does an excellent job at figuring out, you know, how this is, you know, where the photo is lacking, and takes those settings and moves those bars all around just to give you a nice, pleasing thing. So it's not just going to, you know, just move the exposure up, you know, an f-stop or whatever, and get it brighter and bright, the whole picture brighter, but it recognizes, well, maybe you want this part bright. Maybe this is the subject, or the sky's maybe too bright, so I'm not going to brighten that anymore, but I'll brighten the face of the subject in the photo. So it does some smart stuff like that. It has a color setting, which includes saturation, contrast, and color cast. Has some retouching, red eye removal, that kind of stuff. Does a nice job with that as well. So they added most of this, and there's some auto features as well. But they've done a real nice job with making this very approachable for a person who just wants to make their photos look a little bit better. Sometimes the lighting conditions are a challenge, and spending 30 seconds with the tools here and playing with some of the sliders gets you some real nice results. So Photos has done, really upped its game with the editing features. And then once you edit a photo, you can always undo them as well. And they also carry across to the other devices as they sync. Couple things I don't like about Photos, and I'm comparing it to Lightroom, which is a more photographer-friendly tool, but much more sophisticated, much harder to learn. But it has a couple features that I miss a little bit. One is the ability to use brush tools. So if you want to remove, a tourist that kind of ruined your shot of the Taj Mahal or whatever it is you're taking a picture of, you can do that pretty easily with Lightroom and, you know, or tools like Photoshop as well, where you can use a kind of a healing brush and just kind of paint over them, and, you know, by magic that tourist disappears and your photo is as if you were the only one there. So you don't have that kind of thing. You have some very rudimentary brushes, but not, you know, anything near what some of these other tools have. And another thing that is a challenge is the only way you have to tag your photos is with words, which is okay, or favorite. So it's a favorite or not. So you click on a heart icon and it becomes a favorite. What Lightroom has is kind of a rating system, 1 to 5 stars, for instance. And sometimes that's a good way to say, well, this is a keeper, or I'm kind of in between on this one, or this one's definitely, you know, hitting the trash. So you don't have any in between. It's either you like it or you don't. So hopefully in the future, when Apple improves the product, they'll kind of look at that as a baseline feature that they should have added in the first place, just a way to rate your photos so you can kind of group them and sort them on their worth, because you can, with your smartphone, and because photos are digital now, you can take gazillion photos, and with burst mode and those kinds of things that you have, you've got to find a way to get quickly through your photos, and they don't provide a real great way of doing that. So just two minor knocks, I think, in general, these built-in tools, and they come for free with the phone or with the operating system. Just a great application. So if you haven't tried it lately or kind of plumb the depths of what it can do, spend a few minutes with it. I think you'll like it.
That's a great review, Martin. You covered so much. I was thinking as you were talking about saving space that I was shocked just recently. For some reason, something popped up on my screen, and I realized I have almost 10,000 photos on my phone.
Holy cow.
That's a lot. So, space saving would probably be a good idea.
Yeah, that's in your settings, yeah.
Yeah, and then, you know, that concept of adjusting all those sliders with one and everything coming along for the ride, that's probably like my number one reason to have never learned something like Lightroom or whatever, because every time I try to touch a slider, I really mess up my pictures and I have to figure out which way the others should go in correspondence with that to keep it all looking good or improved or whatever. So that excites me to have that ability to make it think for me about all those sliders. Good stuff.
Yep. Apple's, And Apple, I think they major in kind of playing to the consumer and make these as amateur friendly as possible. And they really have done a nice job. So take a look. Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on to our community feedback. And we've got a bunch of stuff here too.
Yeah. And I think it's kind of all over the board. So I was excited to read some of these things. A lot of these things came from the Wells Google Schools community. So folks, if you aren't a member there, I know about 500 people are. It's a really great discussion forum type place that primarily schools that are obviously using Google, Google Apps, Google Suite in the classroom are members there and discuss their challenges with working through different questions and things. But these questions actually, all three of them are kind of more general questions that I thought would be really helpful for our audience. The first one came from Dan Johnson. He says he's looking for suggestions for identifying Chromebooks, a simple, inexpensive way. We've tried printable labels and other sticker types. And he got some really great responses. I will say that most of them fell into a couple of categories. One of them would be printing labels and sticking them on, but people added that they put an extra piece of tape over the top. So like some really strong mailing tape or whatever. And different people said they've lasted for years with the extra protection over the top of them.
Kind of library book method, right?
Right. Jason Schmidt in particular mentioned that they use asset labels from Seton, S-E-T-O-N, and that each of the labels cost about $1, but they're impossible to remove and they don't fade or rub off. And I can remember a time, a long time ago, where we used something like that to label our equipment at the Senate. I'm not sure if we're still doing that.
But yeah, those were asset tags that, you could not even pry them off.
Exactly.
Some special glue, yeah.
So if something was stolen, you know, it would be very identifiable and stuff. You wouldn't be able to hawk it on the black market or anything like that. So I guess that's the kind of quality that Jason's talking about. The other answer that was pretty predominant throughout the responses was people just use Sharpies and write on it. And the Sharpie may fade over time, but you can go over it again a second time and that it's lasted for years. So they use silver to write on black, and Sharpie pens work well. So
interesting.
I thought that was
side,
cool.
Little side note, I've been putting in new flooring at home and learned everything I know from YouTube on how to do that. But one of the guys that I watch, he's actually very knowledgeable, uses a Sharpie to mark, you know, the length of boards and, you know, cut lines and those kinds of things, which I thought was really strange. You're writing with Sharpie on your laminate flooring. And as it turns out, I don't know if this works for all surfaces, but denatured alcohol will take a Sharpie off. Hmm. So I wouldn't try that on clothing, but it works great on laminate. So,
And that just reminds me, we would use Sharpie on laminated little name tags for VBS or whatever at times.
Yeah.
And you can spray liquid hairspray, not the aerosol kind, but it must have that alcohol in it or whatever.
In it, right.
But that'll wipe Sharpies off of laminated stuff.
There
so.
You go. Boy, this is more for the money with these
all
pro
over
tips
the board.
Wells
yeah.
Tech. Yeah.
Next up, there was a question from Kurt Gosdick, who was looking at using iPads for the Project Lead the Way curriculum. And others recommended managing iPads with Apple School Manager and then Meraki MDM to push apps. And there were a couple of people that chimed in and sang the praises of Meraki. It's MERAKI. Both Rachel Feld and Jason Schmidt had experience and liked Meraki. So if you're looking at managing iPads, that's something to look into. And then finally, on the Wells Google School community, there was a post from Matt Notling, who was asking if anyone has experience with edublogs.org, a blogging platform for students to use with a classroom. And he got a response from Scott Georgeson, who says he's used it for 3 years, and it's great, especially because it's on top of the WordPress engine, so the back end of it looks a lot like WordPress, which is a great skill to have and to have use regularly, so that you have experience for other websites and things. WordPress is used all across the internet now. He recommended using or having the pro account, which he thought was $35 a year. So he goes into some peculiarities and things, particularly you have to make sure students are aware of where they're at in the system, because the back end looks the same for all the different blogs that are created. So make sure they know that they're updating their blog, and you as a teacher having access to all the blogs have to be really aware of where you're at in the system. But all in all, a great review for EduBlogs. I think we talked about EduBlogs years ago, Martin. I remember using it in the classroom in Sleepy Eye when I used to do technology classes there, and was a big fan of it then. So I would guess they've only gotten better.
Yep. I think one of the things that, as you said, has it really going for it is the fact that it does sit on top of WordPress, which
Definitely. Is
running about a third of all the sites apparently in the world. So
wow.
At least that's what I hear. Mm-hmm. I think we had one more piece of feedback, an email from Adam Rose, a Wells member from Livonia, Michigan. First, big fan of podcasts and blogs. Thank you so much for helping those spreading the saving truth of our Lord and Savior. Trying to help my church with developing a strategic communication plan for both internal and external communication. A lot of wonderful activity between our church, schools, school boards, and groups, and each is communicating with different and overlapping audiences differently. For example, our usher schedule is developed, updated, and communicated one way, spreadsheet and printed copies, whereas our school calendar is managed to communicate entirely differently online through our website. Do you have any recommendations for managing communication within the church and school? We would love a service or application that allows people to sign up for notifications and specify how they would like to be contacted, email, text, etc. This information already exists on your site or podcast, please feel free to point me in the right direction. Sally, what do you think?
Well, you know, a lot of different things come to mind, and I think it takes adopting a strategy and using it consistently, which can be a real challenge when you have all these different boards and groups. I guess the one thing that's predominant is that something like a Google Apps solution or a Microsoft Office 365 solution using SharePoint or cloud-based documents is a really great way to have things in one location, you know, efficiently stored and organized, and security-wise, who has access to what. Both of those types of solutions offer that. The other side that came to mind was something like a sign-up now type solution. Used to be Volunteer Spot, where people can post their needs and people sign up, and then it automatically reminds them of things they've signed up for, things like that. So organizing volunteers around activities, that makes for a good solution for those kind of scenarios.
Yeah, I don't know if, and I thought of both of those as well, but I think one other that I thought of, and this doesn't maybe hit, you know, fill the exact bill that Adam is talking about or asking about, but, you know, a tool like MailChimp, you know, the ability to form electronic communications via a subscription service. So the way it works is people can subscribe to different newsletters or feeds or different things that you create, or different people in your organization can create, and they control it. So if they want to subscribe or unsubscribe, they have the ability to do that. I don't know if they have frequency settings. I suspect they might, but you do have the ability. You're putting the decision in the hands of the receiver.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that came to mind is just make sure your church information system or school information system has a way, or you create a way to track preferences. So if they prefer to be tracked or communicated with via email or text or neither, that you're tracking that and can export that and do stuff with it, because you won't be able to do that otherwise. So I can't think of, Sally, a kind of a single tool that does all of that. So it's maybe a cobbled together solution. But one of the reasons we do this show is to throw this out to our listeners, and hopefully people have experience with this and can share some feedback for Adam.
Yeah, definitely. The wheels are definitely turning, and I think MailChimp has the ability to segment your list so that you can add people to different lists all within your same account. I thought of Google Groups, which we use for our Wells Tech community, Wells Tech email group, basically. And people can decide to receive the communication immediately or in a batch format on a weekly or daily basis or whatever. So there's lots of different ways. And then a tool to bring it all together, maybe something like If This Then That, where different things trigger these different tools that are part of your communication plan. Exciting to hear about that work at St. Paul's in Livonia, and we'd love to hear a follow-up, Adam, as you do put your global communication plan in effect.
Yeah, I think even tools like your social media tools like Facebook, you know, have different ways to segment and lists, and they can, you know, determine whether they want to get a text message, you know, when some hits or whatever. So interesting
stuff. And you can control them with things like Hootsuite, where you
Where you can time your communication. Community feedback is so easy to do, as Adam did and others. You can email us, wellstech@wells.net. You can go to our show notes page who went to our show notes page? Theodor Kufall, was he through our show notes page? I think so.
That was through Google Plus.
Google Plus, okay. There's another example. Google Plus, Pinterest, we haven't mentioned that in, you know, way too long a time. The show notes page, wellstech.wells.net, is the place to go to find out all about those ways to communicate with the show. And we would love to hear your feedback. Tell us how we're doing. Tell us things you'd like to talk about, questions, answers. All those are fair game.
And this audio podcast always ends with a video.
Video,
and we have a video of the week, Martin. I think
This is an interesting one. I've followed this guy for a long time on YouTube. Photo Joseph is the name. And he does a lot of paid training, but he does these live video training sessions on different photo apps. And lo and behold, he did about an hour-long session on photos, my pick of the week. So I thought I would make this video of the week. It goes on it's over an hour, and all of it, some of it is easy responding to the chat room or questions that he's received, and he's hemming and hawing about a few things, but I think overall a great overview of photos. So if you are intrigued by my description of the pic, tune into that for a little bit deeper dive. And if you're even more intrigued, you can sign up for his training as well. He's kind of an interesting personality, and I think you might enjoy him as well. So that's the Apple Photos overview. I think this was done maybe 6-7 months ago, something like that. So that is our video of the week.
Great stuff. Thanks for finding that.
As I mentioned earlier in the show, we are going to continue our book next week, chapters 17 and 18, and so you're going to want to tune in for that. And we are really happy that you decided to listen today, and we hope that you will come back again and join us once again for episode, it'll be 562. And we're pretty sure Sally might be in the same state next week, but you'll have
we'll
to
see.
Tune in to find out. All right. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week. Bye.